a veteran of the ink-stained profession, visits today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Mike Ridolfi can't stop being a newspaper man, but we'll slow him down today for a conversation on Scribble. I think of you as principally a newspaper man. Is that fair?
I think that's entirely accurate.
Yeah, well, it's how did you stray off the straight and narrow and get into journalism?
Well, I don't think it's anything I need to be reformed of, but, you know, I have to say, so many influences and teachers and things like that, but one of the biggest influences was delivering daily newspapers as a kid on a motor route. I was the extra kid at the Indy 500 hawking papers outside. and I would read everything. And my dad was also a UPI teletype operator, who I used to call him the first low-speed modem. Yeah. he was a fabulous typist. And so we always had newspapers around. I had that connection. And he would do funny dad things like quiz us on spelling over dinner. Mm-hmm. And maybe all those things together really created a fondness for that.
How did you formally, did you major in journalism?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where?
I went to Northern Illinois University. Uh-huh. And I had some wonderful experiences there, great faculty. They also, and still do, have a daily newspaper. And it was a 17,000 circulation, 5-day-a-week daily, entirely run by students. And it was a blast.
Yeah, I imagine. Yet that always seemed to me to be the fun thing to do when you're in college, be on the newspaper.
Well, and it was a tribe. You know, Northern's a big campus. It would be easy for someone like me to get lost among those thousands of students. And it was a really good group of folks, many of whom I remain close to.
Well, how did you venture into the newspaper world then?
Had some good feedback from faculty about writing and things like that. And so that college experience put me in a position to have some good clips. I had some college freelance work I did for the Tribune and some wonderful stories there that got the attention of Jerry Taylor at the Moline Dispatch, who had an in with the Northern kids. He'd hired some Northern students before. Uh-huh. And so came out here for an interview. And except for 5 years when I moved away to Indianapolis, I've been here ever since.
Yeah, well, that's the newspapers are a home, aren't they?
Oh, very comfortable.
What is it about newspapers that attracts you?
You know, different things at different times. But right now, what really gets me is that our readers, our subscribers, our customers make time for us. There's so much content available in so many different ways. People swipe through it. It's coming through screens on the radio that we hear on the margins while we're doing other things. Our readers at the North Scott Press, where I am now, they get that paper on Wednesday and they make time for us. I call it the North Scott Press News Hour because when it comes in the mail, they're expecting it. They've adjusted their day so they have time to read there. And that relationship is precious. It is this zillion-dollar relationship for the newspaper industry.
I hadn't thought of that. That's true. When I listen to the TV news, I'm always doing something else, right? But when Margaret and I go up, the first thing we do in the morning is at about 5:30 or 6, we go up to Hardee's and have coffee and maybe a biscuit or something, and we read the paper.
Yeah. That's every morning. I can't start if I don't read the newspaper. But that's been the case since I was a child. Commercial Appeal came in the morning, and I read that and went to school. Actually, I started going through that before I went to school. Didn't know what I was doing with it, but I know I could read the funnies. I could make out the pictures. And then in the afternoon, the Press Scimitar came around. After school, I would read that. And the idea of a town not having at least one newspaper, but should have a couple, morning and afternoon. But afternoon newspapers have just vanished. It's the world changes.
Oh, and I loved working on afternoon papers, the Dispatch initially, and the Indianapolis News, which was the paper I delivered as a kid. The afternoon newspaper cycle is just thrilling. You start bone early, five, six in the morning. And my initial beat was the Rock Island Courthouse. So I'd stop at the cop shop, over at the courthouse, go up to Jim Taro's state's attorney's office. And they were very kind with young reporters. Then you hustle up the copy, you get it to an editor. Mike Hilfrink or Jerry Taylor would throw that copy back at us and we'd firm it up. And no matter how hectic it was, first deadline, I think it was like about 10:30, second deadline, about noon, you were done. That was it. And then you start gearing up for the next day. I just like that cycle.
I still do not understand how you people do that, because I could no more work under that kind of a deadline. Do you just start writing or what?
Well, you don't think about it too much.
No, I know. But then how can you write if you don't think about it?
Well, I have different processes, and it's been interesting since I've moved to the North Scott Press how these processes change. And I'm interested in learning your writing process, because you are a very prolific writer, Roald, and have done the research. And I find managing my process gets me through and gets over that hump. There's no time for writer's block.
I don't have writer's block. It just takes – I've sat literally at a – typewriter for 8 hours waiting for the first sentence to come, which is stupid, right? I mean, why don't I just get on with it? But I did write sports copy for our weekly newspaper in town when I was a senior. But, you know, you just take notes during the game and then you have a couple of days after, because it's a weekly, you have a couple of days to do it. But to do a beat and then get an article out in an hour, I'm amazed at people's ability to do that.
I used to wonder about theater critics in New York. They go to a play, they'd bolt out of the theater, write their copy, and by midnight, it would be in the press. And I think, how do you do that? How can you make an assessment and do it that fast and come out with great copy? Those guys really were good.
And get all your facts right in terms of the composers, band members. What I tell my students, lead with your fingers. If you don't sit there, wait for the idea to move your fingers, put your fingers on the keyboard and start wiggling them and coax those ideas out.
That's what I teach my students. I can't do it,
though. The Robert Caro, I mentioned a couple of programs ago in his book, Working. His teacher, who was a noted critic, appraised his work and said, but you'll never be able to accomplish what you want, Mr. Caro, if you think with your fingers.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so that's how he got into doing research of such incredible depth. I mean, the lengths he would go through to reading in his book on Working and what he did... when he's writing Robert Moses, putting these streets through, eliminating neighborhoods, and why that neighborhood and not that one. He went and found out. He talked to the people who lived there. He chased them down wherever they had moved. Holy mackerel. I mean, that's obsessive. You can't do that as a reporter.
Well, you have different deadlines. Certainly you have daily deadlines, but we have weekly and monthly, annual projects. The pursuit of information is also a thrill for me. And one thing I found as I've grown in this profession is the thrill of the pursuit is more of an appeal than actually sharing the information with someone else.
Uh-huh. How did you wind up at the North Scott Press?
I've known Bill Tubbs out there for many years. And had watched what he was doing. And when I found myself looking for work after all those years at the Quad City Times, I was filling in, helping Bill do some stuff. And actually, when I went over there, I thought I'd teach him a thing or two about the newspaper business. And what I found out is his adherence to old school ways is what really not only kept customers, but drew new ones for folks who wanted to put that time aside, like we were talking earlier, for it, and not to be distracted with trying to shovel content onto an internet where we know, now we know for sure after all this time, the revenue just is not there on the internet model. It's a supplement, but in terms to make the kind of profits you need to sustain pursuit of information, the online model is just not there, still not there.
You mentioned students. Where are you teaching?
I teach at Muscatine Community College. I teach a news writing class there, and they've also had a student newspaper there since 1951. The Calumet, student run since 51.
Wow. I didn't know that. But there are a lot of things I don't know because I'm not a newspaper man.
Well, I've had a hand in journalism education for about 20 years now at pretty much every college around here, including Augie, St. Ambrose. I was at Knox for 3 or 4 years. I just get a kick out of it, and being around the students inspires me, and it's just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, that. But you still write. You still write. And what kind of stuff do you do for North Scott?
Covering the local town councils, the county government, a little bit of the politics around there. It's a small operation. Bill Tubbs, our publisher, and his wife Linda are the owners of this and two other papers. And Bill, he writes all the time now too. Scott Campbell is our editor-in-chief. Scott handles all the sports. I like to say I'm the young one on the staff. Scott's got me by about 8 months. But Scott's been there a long time. He knows the community really well and writes from that authoritative viewpoint. But he's also a blast to work with. And in that small environment, there's no hiding. If it gets done, we know who's going to do it. It's going to be us three and then Aaron Gentz, a wonderful journalist who helps present our stuff online and does a lot of our arts and theater coverage.
Are you responsible for your own editing?
You know what? I am better read at the North Scott, edited at the North Scott Press than I've ever been in my life. Bill and Linda take pages home and proof them overnight on the page. Tracy Dunn has been there for years. She reads every single word. So every story that goes in there is read at least 3 times. And I haven't had that level of oversight since my dispatch days.
Do they make a lot of changes or...
No, we got good feedback and, you know, we've all been around for a little
right.
bit. And although I really appreciate their feedback about reaching an audience, and that's one of the things I've really gotten out of the 3 years of the North Scott Press, that commitment to a very specific audience, not a general idea of a mass media. I mean, I run into these people in towns and they engage me in conversations about the specifics of their town. They care about them and they know about them because of their engagement with the paper.
You know, spending so much time writing, and particularly in the newspaper business, it must be depressing to see the shrinking of the newspaper industry. Newspapers are dying all over, and nothing worthwhile is taking their place.
It's a vacuum, and a time vacuum that, again, like we said, people had committed the time to that product, and when that went away or the paper was made smaller, less interesting, they filled that vacuum with other things. But another wonderful discovery for me at the North Scott Press has been this world of weekly journalism, where there are people committed to their communities who are maintaining their circulation over time. Our North Scott Press has held circulation for the last 20 years pretty darn well. There is not a daily in America that can say that.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
No, I'd assume just the opposite. I've been trying to get Don to interview, you know, a small town editor and think that, you know, if the Quad City Times and the Argus are having problems, boy, they're really having problems. But you say no, it's just the reverse.
Well, it's a hustle. It's tough because the business model of all newspapers relied on some solid big retail advertisers. And as Bill Tubbs, our publisher, said, he can count and name the farm implement dealers. I think he says there were 7 of them in Rock Island County when he started their fit. And he's been there a long time. Now I'm not sure there's even one big equipment dealer left in the county. And those are, and you know, a grocery store in every town.
Right.
Those were good, solid anchors. So we've got a 2-person ad staff that works real hard to get the inserts and get the ads to keep us going. And then that attention to customer detail. We have customers coming through our front door every single day. Some in the back door, park off the alley.
Uh-huh.
And they come in to drop off stuff. They come in to tell us stories. Just like the old days when I was over in the Moline Bureau for the dispatch in downtown Rock Island.
Yeah. Have you thought about doing other writing, books and so on?
You know, I've got so many experiences and things like that. I do some songwriting, which is wonderful and a lot of fun in a whole different type of area. So I imagine there's something there, but I've already got 3 projects I got to knock out this week.
Well, you don't have time right now to do anything like writing a book, do you?
And I don't have any experience in getting that done. You know, I've asked people for, I like to interview writers, and I seek out writers to interview to find out about their writing environment. And I also ask about the book. And the best advice on writing a book I ever got was from Leonard Pitts, columnist that I believe the Times, I'm not sure the Times carries Leonard Pitts anymore or not. Well, Leonard Pitts said, I go, how do you do that? He goes, 1,000 words a day.
Yeah.
He goes, anything more than that, you're stretching. Anything less than that, you're a piker.
Yeah. That is a formula that I've seen over and over again as I read about writers and so on. 1,000 words a day. And I don't know what's magical about that formula, but so many people seem to follow it. I think Roald does, don't you? 1,000 words a day?
No, I think about them, but I don't write them. I don't write them down.
Well, what's your writing environment like, Roald, when you sit down to write? Describe it for.
It's totally different from what I teach my students. I teach my students to free write and just let it all go, and then some ideas will gel. I have to sit there and wait for that first perfect sentence, which then tells me what the second sentence ought to be, and it's a screwy way of writing, but.
And are you a laptop?
I don't like a minute of it. I hate it.
So you like having written, not necessarily writing.
I love having written.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's. But you know, you.
But
talk,
I know there are people that love writing. And
yeah, that I don't understand. I don't understand loving writing. And I've known people who write as naturally as they speak. I had a friend who edited the Catholic Messenger years ago, Donald McDonald, brilliant man, great journalist. And he would sit at his typewriter, his fingers would fly. And he'd lock himself in his office, and in 2 hours he'd come out with a column which would be distributed all over the country. I thought, how do you do that? How can you write that fast? How can you think that fast? You talk about sitting at the typewriter. I sit at the computer on Wednesday night and think, what am I going to write about? And the first sentence I write quite often becomes the column. And I often wonder, where did that come from? That was not what I was thinking about writing. It just, that sentence materialized, and rather than think of another one, let's just follow this.
Lead with your fingers. And trust your process that you're not going to figure out. Now, are you on a laptop, Roald, or are you on
No, I can't do. It should be theoretically easier to do write on a computer or a laptop, but it flattens my style. Because it makes me self, I don't know what it does. No, I have to sit there and scribble it out and make notes. I don't ever really write it out entirely longhand, but enough so that by the time I get to the computer, I've pretty much have written it.
How about you, Don? Are you?
Well, you know, Mike swore by the correcting Selectric. I use that until, and I bought a computer and put it upstairs and thought someday I'll use this. And then kept using the correcting Selectric to write my column until it threw a shoe one Wednesday night and I couldn't fix it. So I ran upstairs and tried to figure out how do you work this computer. And so I started writing on that, and then I discovered you could move stuff around. You could correct without whiteout. You could, and I'm such a lazy person that I thought, oh, this is what I'm going to use from now on. And so got the typewriter repaired, but I don't think I've used it since.
Well, you know, I started in the cut and paste days where you would take up hard copy.
Right.
But I was blessed at Northern, even back in 1980, they had a digital front-end system.
Hmm.
And as a matter of fact, when I came to the dispatch, they were looking at the same vendor, and my little college knowledge helped a little, helped guide them there, although Jerry Taylor was a pioneer in that area.
Yeah.
You know, Barb Ickes told me that she still handwrites sometimes.
Does she?
Yeah, I don't, because I can't read it afterwards.
Oh, my handwriting is going downhill, too.
I really can't. You know, I start out writing rather carefully, and then I think, well, I'll abbreviate that, and then it's just, and first thing you know, it's gibberish. I go back to it, and I think, what in the world was I thinking? Because I can't make anything out of this. So, no, I'm stuck on the computer. That's pretty much it.
And so, Mark, what do you see as the future of newspapers? I mean, you know, Margaret and I could not get along without it. None of my kids subscribes to a single paper. So the average age of the reader in the Quad Cities must be in the 50s or if not 60s.
I'm bullish. And here's why. There's so much appeal to community right now. I'm feeling it. And tribe and connection. And I think that across platforms, both through print and through digital and through social media, that people can be drawn to things they perceive as local sources. You know, we see the small local businesses. Look at everybody with the big long beards like they used to have. And some of the other trends that have come back. I'm hopeful that some of that commitment to local will help some of these newspapers. The thing that really kills me and that I watch is seeing these decisions made from afar about local content and local news so that everything is cookie cutter.
Right.
And cookie cutter is the death of most products, but particularly news.
Well, the worst thing that could happen to a newspaper is to be publicly traded, because investors are not newspaper people. And if you're not a newspaper person, you shouldn't be allowed near a newspaper. But that's my own prejudice.
Well, and I see their attraction, because for years, newspapers were cash cows.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a license to print money for a lot of good reasons, because it created a local marketplace. I did some research on the founding of the one of the predecessors to the Quad City Times way back when, and it was started by business folks who went to Peoria to find an editor to bring them back here with a promise that if you come up here and start a paper, we have an advertising group ready to support you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
The kicker on that story is that advertising group reneged on their contracts to promise, which is inherent in the newspaper business.
Well, I think no matter what happens, you'll continue being a newspaper man, Mark, and more power to you. Because newspapers, I think, are one of the better devices for communicating that have ever been invented, and I would hate to be without it. But thanks again for spending time with us.
What a pleasure.
So does your checkered career include column writing, newspapering?
I minored in journalism in college, thinking that it might be one of the options that I had. And I wrote for our high school. I mean, I wrote for the town weekly newspaper in Mountain Lake. I covered the basketball news, which means I attended the games and took down notes and then came home and wrote them afterwards. But it was a weekly paper, so I didn't have a deadline for an hour later or something.
Yeah.
I would have killed me. I did write in when I was in college. I did write several feature articles, and I eventually for 2 years did a column called Tweets by Tweet.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't.
Why didn't you go into newspaper work?
Because I thought it was easier to go on to graduate school than actually work. Would be my guess.
Well, in just a few minutes we have left here, I want to mention something about Mina Alexander. She's a poet, a very well-regarded poet who died last November. And I ran across her. I can't exactly tell you how and why, but she wrote something that directed me to Shelley's Defense of Poetry. And I went back and read Shelley's Defense of Poetry for the first time in my life. And I became intrigued by Mina Alexander, who was born in India. She moved to Sudan when her father went there at the age of 5. She graduated from college at the age of 18 in Khartoum, and then graduated at a college in England at the age of 22. She was at the Sorbonne for a while. She went back to, she was all over the world and settled in the United States and wrote great, great poetry. Illiterate Heart is perhaps her best known collection. Well, what caught my attention, she wrote once about giving a lecture, and something occurred there which caused her to write a poem. And the poem is Question Time. And she talks about, let me just quote a line from the poem. Her question, a woman in a sweatshirt, hand raised in a crowded room, what use is poetry? And then there's several lines later, and then she said, standing apart, I looked at her and said, we have poetry, so we do not die of history. I had no idea what I meant. For some reason, that just grabbed me, and I read more about her, not so much I've sent for her poetry, and because of her, I read Shelley's Defense of Poetry. And
so you know what value poetry is, right?
No,
what does Shelley say? Poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world.
And she quotes an interesting response to that. And I don't think I have that in my notes here. No, that's something else.
I have an interesting response too. W.H. Auden, poetry makes nothing happen.
Oh, well, there's someone who wrote a more elaborate rebuttal of that. And I wish I'd brought that along. But Shelley works at it too hard. Some of the things he says I absolutely agree with. I just think, as usual, he goes a little bit overboard. But poets are allowed to do that, I guess. And with that, I think we are... No, we're not quite done yet. We still have a little bit of time. And before we go, I want to remind our listeners that although we are late in Poetry Month, we're past Poetry Month, well past, we're in June. But poetry is still worth examining, and you might want to look at the poetry of Mina Alexander, and Illiterate Stories, I think is the name of that. I can't remember for 5 minutes. But she also has a memoir out, which is highly regarded, and I think that one is called Fault Lines. But Mina Alexander, somebody I think you would be well advised to look into if you love poetry. And she certainly is a very interesting person. But that'll do it for now. We finally talked our way out of time. And I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. I'll get your name right one of these weeks. Tweet's my tweet. We'll see you next week on Scribble.